Blog Talk Radio.
I guess Vincent's not going to be outdone. It's all about the laughing this weekend. And it ain't funny. So stop laughing.
But it is fun.
I'm Dale K. I know. I'm Dale K. from Spook Show here along with
Dave Binkley from The Weirdness. Really bad movie. We've just been laughing through this whole weekend here.
With.
With?
Just throwing you off there. Yeah.
There's nobody here.
There's nobody else here. It's just us guys. And a big dumb black cat right now.
I have an orange one here with me, so we're almost outnumbered,
yeah.
Dale.
I know. They're plotting. They're scheming. They do every
cats
night.
They're always scheming.
I hear them whispering. Apparently the meds aren't working. Welcome, folks. It's all about laughing, but not necessarily the funny kind. Not comedies, no sir. And some films. We could talk a little bit about movies and other media where laughing is prominent, and it's eerie, creepy, scary.
Yes, the great thing about that laughter is not only is it just a fun kind, but there are so many shows, even, you know, when you look back at the Batman thing, I mean, if you look at the Joker, his stuff wasn't funny, and all the different things that where people may have been laughing to death and things like that, it can be very intriguing.
Yep, used in many stories, and we're going to hear a couple today as well. You mentioned the Joker, and it's funny. I didn't find out until much later in life that the character of the Joker himself was stylized after Conrad Veidt, I don't know, from The Man Who Laughs. If you pull up pictures of him side by side with either Cesar Romero or any of the forms of the Joker, you can clearly see that he was influenced by that character. And The Man Who Laughs, an old silent film, was about Gwynplaine, who was disfigured with this horrendous grin. And he had troubles with love and blah, blah, blah. It's a good story. It's something of a horror story and very sad.
Yeah, but that sounds like it would be sad. Because it'd be, you know, I don't know where you would look for love, but every place that he looked for was the wrong place, I'm sure.
Yes. No, you've got of course Vincent Price, who we heard at the beginning of our intro music from the very end of the Thriller song. He just had a natural sinister laugh, Vincent Price.
Yeah, wouldn't you say he probably has the most recognizable laugh or sinister laugh out there? Period.
Well, since that album for sure, but I. Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to think of many that had a sinister laugh. Maybe some James Bond movies, you know, things like that. And I guess the thing that makes it creepy, Dave, to me at least, is the idea that someone could take pleasure in the suffering of another. I mean, that's mean. That's sinister.
that is sinister. And, I hadn't really thought of that way, but I don't usually think of things that way. So yeah, it's laughter isn't always the best medicine, I guess. When you look at some of these stories, some of these murders, and we had a couple last night, and we have a couple more tonight. So there's just there are many more out there, but this is just a small representative of some of the things we've had. But there's a lot of fun with laughter too.
There is, we're going to look at the darker side, I think, with these two great shows we got tonight. Of course, a full-length feature from Mystery House, and then we're going to hear a Phil Coe mystery.
Yep. We we've done one Phil Cole before, but we've never done a Mystery House, believe it or not. This is our first Mystery House here on the Eerie House Radio, and it's a little different than other programs. If you want me to go on, I can.
Please do.
Well,
I'm dumbfounded.
Well, Mystery House actually is Mystery House staffers of a book publishing company would perform these half-hour programs. And these were of mystery stories that were actually coming out. So the big question came when these people who acted them out, and these are people who are just, they're not necessarily professional actors. These are people who worked in the company who got to act in these. Would people go out and buy a book where they already knew what the end of the mystery was? That's kind of what the whole question was on this. And at the beginning, when they're talking about, you know, the parts and this and that, that's what they're referring to. This is their own publishing company of mysteries, and yet they're giving out the answers every week before they publish the book.
I don't know if that would work.
Spoiler alert. Maybe they made more money from the radio than they did from their publishing end. You never know.
That could be, because it was the medium of the day. It's one of those things that pulled people away from books. Radio is easier. Television is easier. So who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, there were a couple variations of Mystery House. The first one basically was very, very early. Started in 1929, as a matter of fact. And it was basically a 15-minute, and there were... one thing that we noticed, Dale, in a lot of early radio, a lot of the programs were only 15 minutes long. And here was like an ad from the Oakland Tribune for that. Mystery House to offer more thrills and spine-tingling happenings framed against a musical background are again promised NBC listeners when another episode of Mystery House is released this evening between 5:45 and 6:15 o'clock. Pacific Standard Time. The melodrama serial is to be heard on KGO. I think it was out of Oakland there. So interesting that they had, and it was more. It looks like it was more serialized than what the show that we're going to hear. And so it's a completely different program, but they took the same name because I think Mystery House was the name of their publishers.
It could be a lot of these radio shows came out of these magazines or vice versa.
Well, yeah, I mean, radio in 29, I think that's when NBC was formed. And so that was one of the first network programs right there. And one of the first network programs. So, but again, this is a little different incarnation of it, which happened several years later. Matter of fact, this one goes back to 1946, so this was quite a few years from the 1929 beginnings of this program.
And
I think the premise
like
was different originally also.
Yeah. Okay. This is Mystery House, and we might as well listen to part one. This one's called Laugh. I thought I'd die.
April 14th, 1946.
Mystery House. Mystery House, that strange publishing firm owned by Dan and Barbara Glenn, where each new novel is acted out by the Mystery House staff before it is accepted for publication. Mystery House.
Say, that's tough, Barbie. Dan having to go out of town this week. He's missing the chance to act in a swell story at Mystery House tonight.
It's a very peculiar story, Art.
Good characters, Barbie?
Oh, if you're worrying about a good part for yourself, Art, you have a honey.
Oh, listen, Barb, you know it wasn't that. Tom, you tell her my sole interest is in the show as a whole. She won't believe me.
Well, Art, I think everybody has to have a personal interest in everything they do.
You have a personal interest in all your work, do you, Tom?
Why, certainly. Now, you take this message. Just listen.
Okay, places, everybody. Set the scene, Tom.
Laugh? I thought I'd die. Tonight's story opens in the luxurious but overly ornate dining room of Amos Gadley, a millionaire and an incurable practical joker. Three other people are seated around the table.
I think you'll find this coffee a rare treat. It's my own special blend, imported especially for my use. Give everybody a generous cup, Jefferson.
Yes, Mr. Gadley.
Drink hearty, friend. You'll never get anything like it.
Is this another of your jokes, Gadley? What's wrong with the coffee?
Wrong? Don't trust me, eh, Carmen? It's wonderful coffee. Wonderful.
No, thank you. And I wouldn't take any either if I were you, Garnett.
Don't worry, Lance. I won't.
Drink up, all of you. I'm a man of whims, and I might decide that I don't like one of you, unless you do as I say. That would be pretty funny.
You're always funny, Gadley, but I have no sense of humor.
Quiet. Nobody who lives on my charity can talk that way to me. It doesn't amuse me. Drink your coffee, all of you.
The clown prince has spoken. If he tells me to eat gravel, suppose I must.
I'll drink it, but I don't have to like it, do I?
You love it.
Five will get you 10 on that. Well, here goes.
A toast to the funniest man in the world.
Carmen, sit down.
Awfully sure of yourselves, all of you. It's about time I had this little dinner.
I've been wondering what the point is. I suppose it's something screamingly funny.
We have a point to make, too, Gadley. We've talked things over, and we've decided we're through feeling like charity wards. You're giving us no more than we deserve. We don't propose to go on being stooges for your stupid jokes.
You think not, eh? You'll go on.
Oh, no! No!
Carmen, what's the matter?
Are you... Your face. And Garnett.
What's up?
And yours too, my dear.
we're all turning blue. Our skin.
Not me. I ain't blue.
What was in that coffee?
A little chemical, Mr. Garnett. And don't worry, it's... quite harmless.
As harmless as all your little pranks, I suppose?
I have the word of a reliable doctor that all it'll do is tint the skin a brilliant blue. It'll wear off completely in 24 hours.
So for 24 hours, we look like circus freaks.
Yes, Carmen, darling, for 24 hours. Maybe a little inconvenient.
Anything for a laugh?
Maybe, but this isn't for laughs. Only which one of you has seen this letter before?
How would we know whether we've seen it before or not? It's just a plain white envelope with your name and address typed on it. And no return address.
Of course you wouldn't know. None of you would know. Maybe I'd better read it to you.
Yes, that might be a good idea.
Dear fat funny boy, nobody loves a good laugh as much as you do, and this will kill you. You'll be dead by midnight Saturday.
What? That's tonight.
Don't interrupt. You probably won't appreciate the humor of your murder, but it'll be a big laugh to at least three people. And the letter's signed, guess who? Pretty good, eh?
Excellent.
Yeah? Well, it was supposed to scare me, but it didn't.
Maybe it should have scared you, Gadley.
It had to be one of you three. And so we're going to have a most amusing experiment this evening.
Experiment? What are you up to now?
Jefferson and I will search all three of you for any possible weapons.
Listen, you don't...
I think that you three are the ones mentioned in that letter. The ones who'd get a big laugh from my murder.
Maybe you're right.
I've been a practical joker for years.
You're telling us.
I've had a lot of fun, a lot of fun. You three were, well, my failures. Three jokes that failed to come off.
Three jokes that failed to come off. Just like that. Why, you rotten, filthy, fat old devil.
Shut up! I'm not joking now, Lance. And I can be pretty mean when I'm in the mood. I've paid all three of you. Made up for everything.
If you think you could ever make up for what you've done to me, you're mistaken.
I've never felt humble about taking your money.
Fine, fine. I wanted to be sure I had the right three, and I'm sure I have. Now we're going to have some fun. What time is it, Jefferson?
10:30, sir.
Excellent. The experiment should take about an hour. Jefferson, telephone the police station for me.
Yes, sir.
What is this, anyway? What are you trying to pull?
You'll know soon enough.
Here you are, sir.
Hello? I'd like to speak to Captain Linwood, please. Oh, hello, Captain. This is Amos J. Gadley, Delacorte Apartments. I'm about to be murdered, Captain Linwood. Oh, I don't know exactly, Captain, but certain people are very blue about it. No, no, I'm not joking. Never was more serious in my life. Goodbye. Well, I'm satisfied none of you has any weapons. Hey, Jefferson?
Yes, quite satisfied, sir.
All right, bring in the tray.
I don't get this, Gadley.
You will, Carmen. You will.
Here you are, sir. The tray. A revolver, a hunting knife, and a sledgehammer on it. Say, what's this going to be, a suicide party?
That wouldn't be a bad idea at all, Garnett. No, these weapons are for your convenience. In deference to the weaker sex, I think Carmen should have first choice of weapons.
What's the big idea? Is this another of your jokes?
No joke, Garnett. Here's the idea. You make a choice of weapons. Then Jefferson will turn out the lights at a signal. Each of you will grab your weapon from the tray.
You're crazy.
Lights all out. Each of you with a weapon. And then, if my guess is right, you try to kill me.
This isn't funny, Gadley. I'm going home.
Oh, no, you're not. Because if any one of you refuses to go through with my plans, you don't get any more allowance. You're broke.
No use arguing with him. He'll win as usual. All right, Gadley. I'll take the revolver.
Revolver it is. A very ladylike choice. Lance, I suppose you yield second choice to Garnett. He costs me more than you do.
I want no choice at all.
You take one, all right. Mr. Garnett, this knife or the sledgehammer?
The sledgehammer appeals to me, Gadley. And I hope I can make a lucky swing in the dark. I'll be trying, I assure you.
Thank you, Mr. Garnett. You make the game so much more fun for me. I guess that leaves the knife for the ex-surgeon, Lance. Something poetic about things working out that way, isn't there?
You're out of your mind. You can't go through with this.
You think not? Line up against the wall, all three of you. Hurry.
We might as well.
All right.
I'm going to stand over here at the opposite end of the room. The second the lights go out, make a dash for the weapons.
I suppose we'll stumble over a cord or something.
No, I promise.
See here, Gadley. You can make us play this game, but you can't make us pick up those weapons or use them.
Oh, don't argue with him, Lance.
Are you ready, Jefferson?
Yes, sir.
When I count to three, turn off the lights.
Right, sir.
Keep your eyes on the tray, all of you. One, two, three.
Hey, what's that?
Oh, pardon me.
May the best man win. Close, Carmen. There are four more cartridges left.
Don't worry. I just wanted to see if the gun was really loaded.
Hey, be careful with that gun, Carmen.
Nice try with the knife, Lance. I believe you cut my coat sleeve a little.
You're bats. I wasn't even near you.
Very good, Lance. You're smarter than I thought. That was exactly the right thing to say. Oh, excellent. You're really putting me on my mettle. Unfortunately, Mr. Garnett, you hit my shoulder instead of my head, and the shoulder's much better padded.
Who, you devil? You're asking to be murdered. All right, you'll get what you want.
Come, no!
But the novelty's worn off. Turn on the lights, Jefferson. Turn them on.
Right, sir.
Mr. Garnett.
Garnett? Speak to me. Garnett?
No use, Gadley. He's dead.
No, he couldn't be dead. Somebody's trying to...
You wanted a murder tonight, and it looks like you got it. I hope you're satisfied.
Murder?
Certainly.
You killed him, Gadley. First you killed his soul, and now his body. I hope you hang.
I know your reputation as a practical joker, Gadley, or I'd have been here sooner. I thought you were trying to be funny.
Well, as a matter of fact, I was, Captain Linwood.
Say, how about having one of your cigars, Gadley? Hope you don't mind.
Don't
mention it. Thanks. All right, good cigars, Gadley.
Hey!
What the blazes are you trying to pull, Gadley?
Oh, those cigars aren't dangerous now, Captain Linwood. His exploding cigars have been toned down considerably since...
Since when?
Since I was a young surgeon. Gadley gave me one of his cigars before he'd quite perfected his formula. Tetanus infection in my right hand. Result, three fingers amputated. end of a career.
Yeah? Real cute, wasn't he?
I've made it up to him, Captain. I pay him $200 a month. My lawyers drew up a life contract with him.
Life contract, huh? Then it'll be worth $200 a month to you for him to be dead, as far as you're concerned.
Well, I don't mind the expense.
I don't suppose you was paying Garnett anything, too, by any chance?
I can answer that for you, Captain. Garnett got more than any of us. $500 a month.
You little ingrate.
Garnett was an artist years ago, and a good one. But Gadley had a funny boutonniere in his lapel one day. It squirted water in your face when he squeezed a bulb.
Shut up, you little fool.
Gadley wasn't satisfied with just squirting water. He worked out a solution that would make your skin itch. Got into Garnett's eyes and practically blinded him. That was the end of Garnett's painting.
Beg pardon, miss, but is Gadley connected with your...
My being crippled?
Yes.
I was a dancer 10 years ago. Did an adagio act with my partner. Gadley was sitting in one of the front upper boxes. He tossed some carpet tacks onto the stage just as I was starting our hardest routine. I stepped on a tack and missed my partner's arms. I was in the hospital 2 years.
Well, I paid all the bills, didn't I?
Sure, you paid the bills. You've been paying them ever since. And isn't that just wonderful of you?
Yeah, seems like a comical guy, all right. Hey, you.
Me, sir?
Yes, you. What's your particular ailment?
Ailment, sir?
Yeah, what's Gadley done to you?
Oh, nothing, sir. He's been wonderful to me, sir.
Jefferson's his stooge.
Ah. And some things I don't get about this. Sounds awful fishy. You say you gave all three of these, wards of yours a chance to kill you.
Oh, but that was all a joke, Captain Linwood. They couldn't kill me.
What do you mean they couldn't kill you?
I wanted to see which one had the nerve to try murdering me. Which one had sent that letter? The revolver was loaded with blanks. A knife wouldn't kill a flea.
Why not?
Very clever knife. The blade slips right up into the handle the minute it touches anything. See?
Hmm. Somebody spent a lot of time to make a fool thing like that. But this sledgehammer, now don't tell me
looks
that...
Looks murderous, doesn't it?
No! I didn't hurt a bit. I scarcely felt it.
Yeah, the weight's all in the end of the handle. The actual sledgehammer is made of balsa wood, painted black. Doesn't weigh half an ounce.
Anything for a laugh, huh? But here's something I found. And it ain't so comical.
What? It's a toy balloon. Like they sell at circuses.
Yeah. But this little toy balloon killed Garnett. See how much of a chuckle you can get out of that.
Hey, so that's part one from Mystery House.
Mystery House actually comes to us out of WGN Chicago, which was one of the big heads of big channels of Mutual. It was also owned by, WGN was owned by the Tribune, the Chicago Tribune newspaper. And so since it was owned by them and operated by them, here's the quiz time. What does WGN stand for?
Wee Great Network. I
don't
know.
For it. Really close for it. World's greatest newspaper.
Ah.
WGN, Chicago Tribune, was they self-proclaimed it the world's greatest newspaper, and that's where WGN came out of.
Now, are they related to or the same entity as the television channel WGN that also comes out of Chicago?
Which was also, I don't believe it is now, but was part of the Tribune Broadcasting arm, yes.
Ah.
I think that they sold the TV channel, and I'm sure the TV, the radio channel had been sold down the road. Maybe not. I'd have to look that one up. And they usually had a studio audience for these programs. Now, a lot of times you couldn't hear them until certain times, like The Shadow usually had a studio audience. You almost never heard them, but at the end, they would open up the house mics, and you could hear people applauding at the end of an episode of A Shadow. And that may be what happens here. I don't remember off the top of my head hearing a live studio audience go on. But but they did have, for most of these programs, live studio audiences. And actually, the show was so popular in Chicago after it was offered on it was also offered on Saturday mornings at 11 a.m. After the regular airing, the next Saturday, it would be on. It was either on a Sunday, Friday, or Monday evenings. Kind of got switched around a little bit. But would repeat on Saturday mornings at 11, which also kind of shows you that it really was void of a lot of the violence that evening programs might have during the day.
Yeah, especially Saturday mornings when the little kiddies might be listening.
Yep, because there weren't any Saturday morning cartoons on the TV, because there wasn't much TV then.
Yep, no, the radio it was, and radio it is. This is great because these are like all new stories to me, the ones I haven't heard before, which are plenty, as we discover together some great new radio great new old radio broadcasting.
Now, there were about 100, only estimated about 137 of these shows. Only 32 are still in existence. But it's so weird because it's such a good, clean recording. So it just, you wonder what happened to all these. You just wonder.
I don't know. I wish Gar was here because the organ is very good in this.
Oh, yeah.
It was
yeah,
the first
see,
thing that struck me right when it started.
Yep. That's one thing that Gar would definitely be commenting on, and he will when he hears it in the, because Gar always, even when he isn't here, he listens to it in the archive, which everyone else can do. Just go to blogtalkradio.com/DaleK. You can see all of the programs we have there, and you can listen to them right from there. So it's and Gar, yep. Gar will do that. He'll get up Sunday and pull down both the Friday and the Saturday show and listen to them.
Oh,
and
poor guy.
Too.
Poor guy. Listening to this stuff. No, it's good. Good times. Welcome Fogsbane and all other live listeners. Vorpalbite joined us in the chat as well. Hey, it's great.
Yeah, Fogsbane was there and he kind of blinked in and out a couple times and I saw him there last night, and I didn't see him there, so he said there's been something wrong with the chat. So thanks for sticking around, Fogs. We're having a good time laughing through the weekend this weekend.
Yes, in a sinister way.
I won't give a spoiler, but I tell you what, this story has a pretty darn good ending. I will tell you that.
And let's hear it now. Part two, the exciting conclusion of Mystery House. Laugh? I thought I'd die.
And now, Act Two of Laugh? I thought I'd die. We go to Captain Linwood's office in the police station. He's talking to Amos Gadley's butler, Jefferson, as the scene opens.
You know anything about that balloon, Jefferson?
A balloon?
I talk plain enough. The big red rubber balloon in the base of the ash stand in Gadley's apartment.
You're all wrong about Mr. Gadley, sir. He's innocent, absolutely innocent. He's a good man and a generous one. And he has a wonderful sense of humor.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm laughing fit to bust. Now, what was that balloon doing in the base of the ash stand?
Why, what difference could it possibly make, sir?
Because there were faint traces of a very deadly poison gas in it. And that's what killed Garnett.
Oh, you're all wrong, sir. Mr. Gadley filled the balloon with air and put it down in the base of the ash stand for a joke, sir.
A joke?
Yes, indeed, sir.
Now tell me why I should laugh.
Why, don't you see, sir? Somebody drops their cigarette down into the ash stand and presses the button to let it down into the hollow base. It hits the balloon and bang.
You saw him blow it up with air?
Why, yes.
The balloon wasn't busted, Jefferson, but it was empty. And you're lying.
Well, maybe I didn't see him actually blow it up, sir. But he told me he did.
Oh, he told you he did, huh? And he told you he didn't mind paying Garnett $500 a month, too, I suppose.
Out of this jail, Linwood. My lawyers will have you walking a beat before you get through with this.
So you don't know from nothing about a balloon in the ash stand, eh?
No, no, no. I've told you that.
You weren't playing a cute little practical joke.
No. How many times do I have to tell you no?
Oh, it's no good, Gadley. You were tired of pain. If you could kill one and make it look like one of the other two did the job, you could cut your payments a lot.
That's ridiculous.
You thought you were safe. You had the balloon filled with deadly poison gas.
I don't know anything about any balloon, I tell you.
Yeah, I heard that before. Garnett was getting more money from you than either of the others. You held the balloon in front of his face and slowly released the gas.
You're mad.
Then you dropped the empty balloon back in the ash stand and pressed the button to let it down into the base. You thought it would never be found.
You can't do this to me. It's a frame-up.
A silly little toy balloon, but it collapsed with a bit of poison gas still in it. You know what that means, Gadley?
You're an utter idiot. You're insane.
It means the electric chair for you, Gadley.
Hello, Carmen. I think the police have found out that Garnett loaned you money after his wife left him. He didn't? Oh, but I happen to know. And you hadn't paid it back, had you? I'd tell the police all about it if I were you, before you get into trouble.
Hi, Mr. Jefferson. What do you think you're doing?
You heard what...
Yeah, every word of it. I've been following you, and you might as well quit trying to clear your boss. Because this is going to be one joke that's on him.
You again.
Yeah, and this time maybe I got something that'll help you. I don't know, but I ain't a guy to let my prejudices overcome my duty.
You're a stupid fool.
Maybe, but I'm not alone if I am. Did Mr. Lance and Mr. Garnett ever have a quarrel when they were in your apartment?
Why, I don't know. Maybe they did.
You didn't hear one?
I don't remember.
Oh. You know, I'm going to throw that butler of yours in the clink right along with you if he don't quit messing up this case.
What do you mean?
He told me Lance and Garnett nearly came to blows at your place a couple of weeks before the murder. That you pulled them apart. And that Lance said to Garnett...
Yes, yes, it's true. Absolutely true.
Oh, you remember now, huh?
Certainly I remember. They had a fight, a bad one.
Then suppose you tell me what Lance said to Garnett.
I don't remember.
That's what I thought. Your butler told me Lance said to Garnett, I'll kill you the first chance I get. You'd have remembered that, Gadley, if it had ever been said.
Mr. Gadley, sir.
Jefferson. Good old Jefferson. They let you come to tell me the governor's going to grant a reprieve.
I'm sorry, sir.
He's not. But they can't convict an innocent man, Jefferson. They can't do it.
I hate to see you so nervous, sir. You were always so gay, so full of jokes and hijinks, sir. This is, well, no way to die, sir.
You're right, Jefferson.
You could, how is it they say, the young people, sir? You could dish it out. Are you going to let them say you couldn't take it?
No. Thanks, Jefferson. You've meant a lot to me. You've stood by me through everything.
It was nothing, sir.
Here, they're going to electrocute me, Jefferson. That'll be quite a shock, eh? Get it, Jefferson? Quite a shock.
Oh, very good, sir.
The silence will probably be electrifying. I guess I can take it. Jefferson?
Of course you can, sir.
I'd give a sparkling performance tonight, Jefferson.
Oh, very good, sir.
Anything for a laugh, Jefferson? Have a card, eh? No, I'm afraid. Don't leave me, Jefferson. No, don't leave me.
funny, sir. That's the funniest yet. Well, I'll be seeing you in tomorrow's paper. Say, that wasn't bad either, was it? Bye-bye.
I'm holding a wire open to the governor's mansion. There may be a last-minute reprieve.
What do you think, Captain?
Well, if there is, I'll resign.
Jefferson.
Yes. I just came from the death cell. They told me you'd know if a reprieve had come through.
Yes, I will know. Sit down, Jefferson. How was he?
Oh, very brave, sir. Until just before I left. I had quite a time trying to cheer him up then.
How many minutes to go, Captain?
Just one.
Something could still happen?
Yeah, but it would be a miracle. What was it you liked so much about the guy anyway, Jefferson? You know, that's been bothering me.
It was, I suppose, his jollity, sir. So full of jokes.
Yeah.
15 seconds.
He did such comical things. Things that some people wouldn't think were funny at all. But Mr. Gadley could find the humor in them, like...
Just a minute. Linwood speaking. What? Pronounced dead, huh? Thank you.
It's all over?
Yeah, all over.
Well, that's that. Say, did they ever manage to trace Garnett's wife?
No, she disappeared completely.
Too bad you didn't trace her, Captain Linwood.
Hmm? Why, Jefferson?
Because she was my daughter.
What?
If you had found her, you'd have known I killed Garnett.
What's that? You killed Garnett?
Yes, I killed him. I imagine he thanked me for it. He had nothing to live for.
He was getting $500 a month, wasn't he?
Garnett wasn't interested in money. He was interested in achievement. Yes, I killed him.
But if you weren't sore at him, why kill him?
Because it was the best way to kill Mr. Gedley. He was to blame for all my daughter's trouble. She and Garnett were extremely happy till Gadley ruined his career.
But you were trying to protect Gadley all the time.
Yes, but in an extremely bungling way, wasn't it?
Great Scott. And we've electrocuted an innocent man.
Innocent? I'd hardly say that, sir. I don't think you've ever electrocuted a wickeder man.
I'm sorry, Jefferson. I'll have to put you under arrest.
It's quite all right, sir.
All right? And Gadley electrocuted when he was innocent.
Yeah. Good joke on him, wasn't it?
Wraps up Mystery House. Laugh? I thought I'd die.
Nice little ending there. I like that ending.
Yep, pretty good. The butler always does it.
Yeah, the butler did do it this case. Yeah, that's why I said the Vorpal Bite when he guessed it. I said, give that man an explosive cigar. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like the police, just like the policeman got when he came to the house, yes.
Yes.
But, hey, you know, there's one thing on there. One of the regular leading ladies on the show, of course, they were people that worked inside the publishing house, was Nanette Sargent. And she may have been very well seen at the time because she was Miss Puritan Pinup. And
Puritan Pinup?
Puritan, like the religion Puritans.
Yeah,
and,
what the heck?
Yeah, it said here the picture may have adorned the walls of many founding pilgrim bachelor, shocking as it may have been. Man played lead on Radio's Mystery House program. And she showed a lot of leg.
Her ankles.
She showed a lot of leg for a Puritan, that's for sure.
Yeah. Wow. That sounds cool. Well, that was an interesting fact I didn't know. I have a feeling I'm gonna learn something else new. Now, Erie House Radio proudly presents A Garless Moral of the Story.
Yes, apologies, DeGar. I know this is shocking, but if you play too many practical jokes, it may just kill you. And that's no laughing matter. There you go.
Right. Stop laughing. It's not funny. You know whose laugh I remember very, very well that fit into the horror motif? The good old Crypt Keeper from Tales from
oh,
the
yeah.
Crypt on HBO.
Oh, yes. Now, there's a very recognizable laugh.
He just cracked himself up with his puns.
Did he? Yeah, well, the Crypt Keeper did, yes. It's like one of the things he did on where Alan played the devil, and he says, I bet him I could make him laugh, and he says, "No, I'm like you, Dave. I only laugh at my own jokes." You know, so.
Ooh, Fogsbane brought up a good one, and let's play it for him.
Wise man.
That's Renfield. He mentioned. Yep. I got a laugh here for you, and Dave already knows who it is, but if Vorpal Bite or Fogsbane, let's see if you can guess this next soundbite. Let's listen to this laugh and see if you know who this is. All right, I'm going to play it one more time and see if you know who this is. Do you guys know who that is? Vorpal Bite just mentioned something about Sammy Terry. I'm going to play this laugh again. This is a horror host. Hold on. Let's try one more time.
Are you found?
All right. Okay. Yeah. All right. This guy is from Michigan. Does that give you a clue?
Gerald Ford.
One more. Gerald Ford? No. That was the great Sir Graves Gasly from Detroit, Michigan, but also seen for a short time here in Cleveland. Not your horror host. Yeah, no.
Was he a horror host in Cleveland here? I thought he was doing other things. I didn't think he became a horror host until he went to Detroit.
Right, but his Detroit show was seen here. I think Channel 43 picked it up for a short time.
Okay, that I did not know that.
Sort of like syndication, so to speak.
Right.
Kind of like Ron Swede's show from Channel 61. He was seen in different markets. And so was Sir Graves, because you know, Cleveland and Detroit were so close. The Ghoul was also seen in Detroit as well. He left over from Channel 61 and went to Channel 20 in Detroit.
Let's see here. Vorpal wants us to check out Sammy. We'll have to get that in later in the show here, if we can.
Yeah. So I'm thinking Vorpal's got to be from Indiana, if he likes Sammy Terry. And he is so beloved, Vorpal. He is so beloved in that area. I think his son is or was portraying him for a while, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, let me see. I'll have to see if I can pull that down during our next show. But, I got the link here, and let me see if we can pull that up before the show is over. Hoosier.
Yep.
A Hoosier. I'm still not even sure what a Hoosier really is. I know a Hoosier plays basketball.
It's an Indian.
I know a Hoosier plays basketball, but that's all I know about Hoosiers.
I know at times I've said, Hoosier Daddy.
Yeah, but sometimes you didn't want that answer.
No, I don't. Especially in West Virginia, you just never know. Here's another laugh. Maybe you guys can guess. Let's see if you know this evil laugh. All right. Anybody know who that is in the chat? Vorp? Fogs? I'll play it again. See if you can guess this guy. I was hoping that one was kind of easy. We'll try it one more time. That's Boris Badenoff from cartoons. Paul Frees.
Yeah, Paul Frees, Moose and Squirrel.
Moose and Squirrel. And I love the voice. I forget who played Natasha. Oh, that was our dear
June
Foray, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
The one and only June Foray.
She had a good laugh as Witch Hazel.
Yes, she had a great laugh.
And so did the Wicked Witch from The Wizard of Oz. Such
yeah, Margaret Hamilton. Wasn't she, I've noticed a dumb question, but wasn't she from Cleveland? Margaret Hamilton? I thought
isn't
so.
Everyone?
I thought so.
Sooner or later, everything's from Margaret Hamilton. Let's find out.
For some reason, I thought I heard where she was from Cleveland. The land of Cleves.
Land of Cleves. Not just Cleveland, mind you. Oh, no. Shaker Heights. She was born December 9th, 1902 in Cleveland to Jenny and Walter Hamilton. Later attended Hathaway Brown School in Shaker Heights. Shaker Heights.
And didn't she do, what was that, on H&R Puff and Stuff? Wasn't she like a witchy poo on that too? Was that her?
Don't know. I don't think so. No, I know she made a guest appearance on The Addams Family as a witch.
As a witch?
Yes, in a gag role. I think maybe as a witch. I'm not sure. Granny Hester Frump. She was Granny Hester Frump.
Granny Hester
Frump. Yeah, and she actually appeared in three episodes of The Addams Family.
Well, you know, that kind of thing would actually fit in well with that. I think she probably made more money making the coffee commercials. Was it Maxwell House?
Yes.
She was Cora. Had all that Maxwell House coffee.
Yep.
So.
Last thing she did was a TV movie called Pardon Me for Living. In 1982. That was her last credit that IMDb gives her anyway. She appeared twice in the mid-70s on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood as Margaret H. Witch.
Really? Okay.
And in 76, also as the Wicked Witch of the West on Sesame Street.
Oh, she made a living from that, didn't she?
That she did. She was actually the voice of Aunt Em in the 1972 movie Journey Back to Oz. That's ironic.
Really? That was animated, I think.
Maybe not, but there's an animated series called Off to See the Wizard in 67. And she played the old lady who lived in a shoe. Had so many kids. Really? Margaret Hamilton had a lot of kids? Married to a blind guy, I guess. She was in Patty Duke's show. A couple of appearances on Car 54, Where Are You? Once with Make Room for Daddy. And even on the Western show, Laramie. So she got around.
Yes, she did. Hey, Dale, if you want to refresh, Sammy Terry should be there for Vorpal Bite.
Let's refresh.
I feel refreshed.
I feel refreshed. All right. Let's see where it came up. There we go. Here, we got a little something for you, Vorpal. Courtesy of Dave.
Good evening. Welcome to the dungeon that horror builds, the home of Sammy Terry.
Dave, thank you. That was some classic television here on Indie House Radio.
Thank you, Vorpal, because I would not have known to go out and try and find that, especially right during the broadcast here and do that. That is a great laugh, absolutely.
Yeah, Vorpal, that's hard to argue. That is way, way up there on the charts of evil laughs. I got to hand it to Sammy Terry. I have not seen very much of his work. I do know that he's so beloved in the Indianapolis area, well, most of Indiana. And thanks for bringing him up, like Dave said, so we could dig this up for you.
Yeah, and he also said that he likes Ivana Kedavra. Yeah, we had the opportunity to meet her, didn't we, Dale? When we were at the
at Monster Fest Mania.
She was there, and Mike Mace got a wonderful interview with her. Matter of fact, he interviewed her once, and she thought about it, came back to say, can we redo that interview? I actually told you some things I've never told the publisher of a book that's coming out, so can we redo that? I have all the original footage, but we did redo it, and on our free Weirdness Really Bad Movie app for your Android devices, you could see that Mike Mace interviewing Ivana Kedavra. You just go to the Play Store. Shameless commercial time. Pick up the free Weirdest Really Bad Movie app. Go over to the tab for interviews, and you will get to see Mike Mace trying to keep his eyes on her face as he's interviewing Ivana Kedavra. And a couple times he's not real successful at it.
Oh, wow. lots of laughs here tonight, including our next radio offering. Dave and I were talking a little bit about the Philco mysteries, and this one's called Laughing Ghost tonight, but I guess it got so popular, they had a pretty big contest.
Yeah, there were a lot of radio contests, especially in the by the mid-1920s, radio was becoming a big way that they could advertise. And when you get contests, you get people involved in listening and actively participating. It does so much more for your advertising than just throwing out a commercial. Well, Philco, the Philco Radio Company, they really did a lot of these, especially by the mid-1930s. Many of the broadcasts distributed premiums with free and nominal cost, of course, like the different programs like your Annie Orphan Ring and the things like that. Almost all of Philco's sponsored programs were popular and successful. Looking at some of their programs, 1927, Philco Summer Hour, also that same year, the Philco Radio Hour, 33, the Boak Carter in the News, Philco Radio Mysteries in 37, 42, Our Secret Weapon, Dateline, Radio Hall of Fame, Philco Radio Time. They even had Burl Ives and Phil Silvers, and I didn't even really realize that Phil Silvers had a radio show. It just didn't occur to me. It was Philco's 1937 national promotion. It was arguably the most extensive, lucrative, and expensive radio promotion in the history of radio to that point. Philco mounted a year-long, highly aggressive campaign on many fronts to coincide with the production of their 10 millionth commercial radio set. The Philco Mysteries contest was by far the most expensive and ambitious promotion of the year, initially targeted for 100 subscriber stations. So they were looking for 100 stations across the country. By the time the first series of installments, because it kind of aired in sets of four, aired, a report of 243 subscriber stations had signed up for the program. Philco had budgeted a reported $500,000, $500,000 for the promotion. Now, remember, this is in 1937, but almost 150% increase in demand for transcriptions reportedly raised the cost of the 16-week promotion to in excess of $1 million. The advanced promotion of the series preceded the airing of the first installments by as much as 2 months in some markets. Now, by the time the first installment had aired, mystery and detective clubs had sprung up across the country. Anticipation with pooling the resources to solve the advertised 16 mystery installments. The buzz they created obviously worked, as evidenced by the dramatic increase in demand for the subscriptions. Now, Dale, up in the slideshow up top, you have, I think, one of the ads. It may be from here. They were giving out $50,000 for the final answer. Is that what it was?
Yeah, well, I was looking for media to put a little ad together for tonight's show. I found this, and I was just aghast. A $50,000 prize on a radio show back in the maybe early 40s, I'm going to guess.
Back in 37, Radio listeners were continually reminded to visit their Philco dealers to pick up the Philco mystery book designed to accompany each group of four weekly adventures. There were
back
four
then,
such...
You could buy... You could buy a mansion in New York for that kind of money back then.
Or two.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you think of $1 million back then, I mean, Dale, we wouldn't have to do this if we had $1 million back then. Matter of fact, we could if we had $1 million back then. But there were four Philco mystery books distributed during the 16-week run. Now, the question is, were the books really necessary to solve the mystery? And the short answer is, no, but it wasn't enough to simply solve the mystery. The listener had to identify the clues in the Philco's rationale behind the identification of each week's deadly culprit. In retrospect, the mystery books were an absolute essential element of the prize contest. Absent of the published clues and diagrams from each book set in four mysteries, it would be impossible to indicate the clues and on-air disclosures necessary to show one's work, so to speak. So, yeah, basically they drove everybody to their Philco radio dealers. I can imagine, the run they had on these things, these books.
That must have been something. Yeah, contests are fun. We should have one. And we will.
We should. We've talked about it, and we will at some point, yes. But we've talked about it. We've worked up some prizes. We just have to figure out how the heck we're going to do it. That's all.
Yep. we want to make it kind of interactive and let you guys have fun in the chat or through Facebook. We'll figure out something. But we have some cool stuff that you folks might enjoy from the genre. Let's go ahead and pick up our little featurette. This one's kind of short. It's just one part. It's the Philco mystery called Laughing Ghost.
From November 9th.
November 9th.
1937. Just think of that. Nearly 81 years ago.
How does Phil Cole, the girl detective, find the laughing ghost? How does she discover the bloody mystery of the East Woods? Listen to the case of the Laughing Ghost. Listen every week at this time over this station to Philco Radio Mystery Program, the thrilling transcribed mystery broadcast over this station and more than 240 other radio stations under the sponsorship of Philco Radio Tube Dealers. If you haven't entered the great Philco Radio Mystery Contest, enter now. Share in the huge cash rewards given in this $50,000 cash prize contest. Weekly prizes, big grand prizes. Enter this week. You don't need to have entered before. Winning a prize this week, any week, makes you eligible to compete for the grand prizes. Go to your Philco Radio Tube dealer now and get your free copy of Philco Radio Mystery Book Number 3 with official entry blanks. Maybe you haven't been able to get your book and blanks from your Philco Radio Tube dealer. His supply may be exhausted. If so, drop a postcard to Philco, care of this station, giving your dealer's name and address, and yours will be sent you free. You must submit your entries on official entry blanks, so be sure to get yours. Listen at the close of this program for announcement of cash prize winners in a previous week's contest. You may hear your name. Now, with Philco Mystery Book Number 3 open to pages 6 and 7, listen carefully while Philco solves the case of the Laughing Ghost. Our drama takes place on the private estate of Theodore Randolph, where a week ago in the thick woods, a servant named Potter was found stabbed to death. It is a crisp autumn afternoon, and the shadows are lengthening as Philco and Tom Taylor are walking down Winding Drive, which leads from the Randolph residence to the servants' quarters and the main gate.
Well, Phil, now that we've had our talk with old man Randolph, we have practically no idea who killed Potter.
He wasn't very helpful, was he?
No.
All he could do was repeat the tales the servants have told him.
Apparently the police haven't progressed any further than the servants. Gosh, it's a good spooky story.
Ooh, isn't it?
Let's see. Several times at dusk, crazy laughter has been heard right here in these woods, to the east of this road.
Yes. And the police have hidden outside the gate until they've heard the laughter. And when they've run into the east woods, they've found exactly nothing. Mm-hmm. Not even fresh footprints.
That reminds me. Just about dusk right now.
Mm. I'm so glad I'm accompanied by a strong, handsome man.
Well, that's where you've got it on me. I'm crazy about your company, Phil, but right now I'd feel much more comfortable with a strong, handsome man by my side.
Maybe you'll have one in a few minutes. This laughing maniac must be a fairly strong man himself. He attacked Potter, and Potter was 6'2".
Help! Help! Look, here comes a man running. Quick, get behind me.
Help! Don't let him get me!
Oh, he fell down. Come on, hurry.
Be careful, Tom.
He tripped in that mud hole. Did you see his head jerk back?
Yes. I'm afraid he's badly hurt.
Here we are. Here, old man. Now, let me help you up. What were you... No. I'm afraid he's...
Oh. His head is bent back so horribly.
This man is dead. As he was running, he stepped into the hole. His head snapped back and his neck was broken. The crazy laughter in the east woods.
Tom! Tom, come back!
Stay there! I'm going to find out what that man was running from.
Be careful, Tom!
Oh. Hey, lady. What's going on here?
Oh, you frightened me.
Now, don't be scared. I'm Lynch, the caretaker. Hey, what's this?
This man's dead. He was running from something and tripped in this hole.
Dead? Why, it's Nelson.
Nelson?
Yeah, old man Randolph's butler. I guess he's seen that ghost. I heard that crazy laugh.
Where were you when you heard it?
Well, I was running down this path here to the west. It goes to the servant's house. I was in the house when I heard Nelson hollering, "Now come out." Hey, who's this guy coming?
That's my friend Tom Taylor.
Couldn't find a thing, Phil. Hey, who are you?
He's Lynch, the caretaker, Tom. He says this dead man is Nelson, the butler.
Hey, what are you two doing here on Mr. Randolph's property?
We came at Mr. Randolph's request, and we just left him.
Oh.
My name is Cole, Phyllis Cole.
Oh, gosh, what do you think we ought to do about poor Nelson?
You see the servant's house is down this little path to the left?
Yeah, just a little ways in the west wood.
Come on then, Lynch, give me a hand. Yeah. We carry this man down to your house and call Mr. Randolph and the police.
Yes, sir. All right, okay, I got this end.
Right. All right, let's go. Oh, he was a heavy man.
Yeah, he stood about 6'2".
You see all right, Phil?
Yes, thanks. The house is right ahead.
Hey, this fella Nelson answers the description of Potter, who was killed last week.
Yes, both 6'2", black hair, swarthy.
Yeah, they did look alike, kinda. Seems like this here maniac fella likes them tall and dark.
Hey, Lynch.
Yeah?
You any idea who or what Nelson was running from?
Nope. I wish I had. They were all getting the jitters. Gee, poor Nelson's. I liked him. Him and me was real buddies.
When did you see him last?
Well, about 10 minutes ago, here in our house. You know, that's the funny part of it. It's his afternoon off, and he said that he was going for a walk. I told him it was getting dark and that he oughtn't to go out, but he just laughed. Well, here's the house.
Maybe the mystery will be cleared up when they get into the house. Before they do, though, I just want to say that there's no mystery about getting good, clear radio reception with Philco radio tubes. They're built better, they work better, and they cost no more than ordinary tubes, sometimes less. Use Philco tubes in your set. Always buy Philco tubes. Listen, did the house door open? A woman stands there.
Who is it? What's happened?
Now, don't get upset, Anna. It's Nelson. He's dead.
Dead? Oh, Nelson. No, no.
Come on, Mr. Taylor. You're right inside here.
Okay.
Was he killed? Black Potter.
No, Anna. He wasn't stabbed. He fell and busted his neck. This is my wife. Anna, these are friends of Mr. Randolph's.
Oh, it's Nelson. Is he sick?
Hush, Paula. Hush. No, Nelson is sick. Yeah. Here, take him into the bedroom.
Yeah, sure. Here, right through here, Mr. Taylor.
Easy now, Lynch. Easy. I'll phone the police, Phil.
All right, Tom.
Mama, is Nelson awful sick?
Yes, Paula, yes. Hush now. Mama wants to talk to the ladies. My name is Phyllis Cole, Mrs. Lynch. Can you tell me anything about this?
No. Only my poor husband was out there, too, at the same time. He might have...
Did he go out with Nelson?
No, but right afterwards.
Oh.
Poor Nelson. My husband should not have sent him down to the hen house to get fresh eggs. I told him that, but he asked Nelson to go anyway. It's so awful to think that it might have gotten my husband, too.
It? What do you mean by it?
Something mysterious. Something evil. No one can see it. It's a ghost with a terrible laugh.
Mama, I'm scared.
Stay close to me, Paula. Nothing will hurt you. Nelson brought this evil on himself. What do you mean by that?
He scoffed at my belief. He said he did not believe there was a ghost in the wood. When I cleaned windows, he would walk under my ladder and laugh when I told him it was bad luck.
Apparently, you didn't like him very much.
Oh, I did not mind him.
I like Nelson. Papa spanked me when I played with him. Papa hated him. Papa said he was no good.
Paula, be quiet. In my country, children do not talk. Mrs. Lynch, how long had Nelson been working here?
Only about 6 months, that is all.
Have you and Mr. Lynch been here long?
Oh, yes. Almost 7 years now. I met Lynch 9 years ago when we both in vaudeville. I was with my family. A troupe of acrobats.
And your husband?
He was a, how do you call it, a ventriloquist. We often met on the same vaudeville bill in different cities. And soon we got married.
Daddy is a very good,
ventriloquist?
Oh, yes. Sometimes he lets me sit down on his knee and make believe I'm his dummy. We have fun.
I see.
Papa makes his voice sound as though it's coming from somewhere else.
Yes, Lynch is very good. But when Paula came, we decided to settle down for the first time in our lives. We loved this place. But now I am afraid of it.
Well, Phil, I've called the police.
Oh, thanks, Tom.
What's all this, huh? What's going on down here?
Who's this man coming down the stairs?
My brother, Johann.
I'll get that ghost. I'll kill him.
Hey, Johann's been celebrating.
Oh, Johann, you have been drinking too much again.
Never mind, Anna. I'm going to kill that ghost.
Look out, he had a gun. Johann, put that gun down.
No. tell you, I'm going to kill that ghost.
Tom, get that gun.
Now, wait a minute, old boy. You can't kill a ghost with a gun.
Huh?
No. You have to use a special salt.
Salt?
Yes. Now, I've got some, and if you give me that gun, I'll give you the salt.
Good. Here is the gun. Give me the salt.
Sit down, Johann. Be quiet. There is death in this house.
Yes, Anna? Who is dead?
Nelson. He fell outside and broke his neck.
Mama, you said Nelson was sick.
So Nelson is dead, huh? That is good. He will not be chasing after you no more, Anna.
Shut up, Johann. You are drunk. Where did you get that gun? It was Nelson's gun.
It was in his room.
I called Mr. Randolph. He'll be down here when the cops come.
Thank you, Lynch.
Yeah. Hey, Lynch, your brother-in-law just came downstairs with this loaded gun in his hand.
Hey, my golly, here, give it to me. I'll put it away.
Well, if you don't mind, I'll keep it for our walk back to the house.
Tom, I think we'd better go up to the house and be with Mr. Randolph when the police arrive.
All right, Phil. Let's go.
It's quite dark now. Lynch,
yeah?
I wonder if you'd take your flashlight and walk up to the house with us.
Oh, sure. Come ahead. Say, this throws a big beam.
Come right back, Lynch. Huh? Do not leave us alone.
Yeah, okay, Anna. I'll be back soon.
Smells good out here. Must be nice here when there are no laughing ghosts to worry about.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a great country here, Mr. Taylor. I don't see how people live in cities and towns. I've lived in the country all my life. Never been nothing but a caretaker like my old man was. Never want to be nothing else, neither.
Lynch, do you mind walking ahead of us? I think you'll like the path better that way.
Oh, okay. Hey, how come you ain't scared like most ladies would be?
Haven't time, I guess. I've been thinking... It's too bad that Potter and Nelson look so much alike.
Huh? What do you mean?
Here, hold the light steady.
I have an idea the murderer was after Nelson last week. But it was getting dark, and he stabbed Potter instead, thinking he was Nelson. And tonight, he was planning to strike again.
Oh, then you don't believe in that ghost story either, huh?
Hardly.
Yeah, but how about the laughing? Now, there must be somebody in them woods on the other side of the road.
Perhaps not. Perhaps it's only a voice.
Huh? Well... Hey, I better get back to my family. Here's the end of the path. You take this flashlight.
Oh, thank you.
Phil, what do you mean by saying perhaps it's only a voice in those woods?
Suppose you answer that question, Lynch.
Huh?
You can do a lot of tricks with your voice.
What? Hey, what are you trying to hang on to?
All right, Mr. Ventriloquist. Huh? Keep walking ahead of us. And don't forget, Mr. Taylor has a gun. Keep him covered, Tom.
Right, Phil. Well, Lynch, it looks as though the laughing ghost is done for.
Well, what if he is? I gave Nelson what was coming to him, didn't I? He stole my woman.
Lynch, drop that knife.
He stole my wife. She was crazy about Nelson. That's why I killed him. And this is the knife I done it with. Well, so long. Here goes nothing.
Don't! Don't!
Oh. That's funny. Don't hurt half as much as I always thought. I guess I made it too easy for Nelson. That's too bad. Guess I'll have to give the old ghost a chance to have the last laugh on me.
So the laughing ghost wasn't a ghost at all. Did you know it wasn't before Phil Coe found out? Do you know how Phil Coe discovered the guilt of Peter Lynch? Write your solution on the official entry blank which your Philco radio tube dealer gave you with your free copy of Philco Radio Mystery Book Number 3. Follow all rules carefully. If you haven't been able to get your book and blanks from your Philco radio tube dealer because his supply was exhausted, drop a postcard to Philco, care of this station, giving your dealer's name and address, and yours will be sent you free. Listen next week at this time over this station to another Philco radio mystery. Another opportunity for you to win big weekly prizes and be eligible to compete for mammoth grand prizes in this great $50,000 cash prize contest. Phil Coe, the girl detective, is going to solve the case of the fallen star. Who killed the beautiful actress? Next week, you'll find out.
Jeez. How many false endings are you going to have there with that music? All right. That was Phyllis Coe, or Philco, just like the old radios. 50,
yep. What a coincidence. What a coincidence. I think not.
Yeah.
Just think how unique that was to have a female detective back in 1937.
What would be a good name for a female detective? Let's see. I was just thinking back to the last time we had that show full of...
Oh, yes, yes.
Female detectives.
And that's the first time we played her. Yes, on that... Yes. Okay, go ahead, say it. Go ahead, say it.
All right. It was Lady Dix. Okay?
Yes.
Lady Dix. We did a show about Lady Dix.
Hey, Lady Detective, what we meant by that.
Yes.
But, you know, everybody with their dirty mind can take it wherever they want it. We will not tell you can't go there.
No. Just don't bring it
I'm
here.
I'm not going there, but we're not
like
going to tell
you.
Like
I just did.
Yeah.
No. you learn something new every day, don't you? I think we're going to learn something now as Erie House Radio proudly presents a Garless Moral of the Story.
Yes, apologies to Gar, as always. If someone steals your wife, don't kill them. You won't have a ghost of a chance to get away with it. There you go.
One
quick thing here to wrap up the whole contest thing that Philco was doing during that year. Of course, most of this information has come to us through the Digital Deli website here. It kind of concludes there's no question that the year-long campaign was successful, despite the fact of the cost of a Philco. Put it in perspective, it's useful to note that the historical context of the 1937 promotional effort, America was slowly recovering from the Great Depression. FDR was on the brink of becoming the president, and Philco quite calculatedly bet on the winner. The 10 million Philco Model 38-116XX was quite an innovative set for its day. It was packed with both evolutionary and revolutionary features and sold for $200. This is 1937. Dale, you could darn near buy a car for $200 in 1937. At the time, much of the middle class America was on the verge of climbing out of depression. With budget plans freely available at most local Philco dealers, the attractiveness and timing for this remarkable radio positioned it well to sell. And, in fact, it did. Although in the process of creating a great deal of buyer's remorse, once Philco introduced their even finer and more revolutionary model, the 38-690, the following year.
Wow. $200. Yeah, you could probably buy a decent used running car for $200 in 1937.
Well, you could. I think the new Model Ts, I think, back then, if they were still making the Model Ts, we're right around $280 or so, I thought. I'd have to look that up. But, you know, $200 to buy a radio was almost as much as to buy a car.
Gee.
And you definitely could have bought a good used one for that. Yeah.
That's amazing.
And when your wife found out how much you paid for it, you'd be living in it.
Yes. And depending on the wife, might be a better option. You never know.
Might be. Oh, shoot. Well, we still have a Vorpal Bite. We can invite him to try and join us here and spin that wheel of radio. We'll have time to do that. All he has to do is pick up his telephone or whatever he uses, a dial or call or voice, Google Voice, whatever, 646-378-0264, and we'll be able to spin that wheel of radio. And yet, we've got some Erie House television tonight, do we not, Dale?
We do. There's some guy, I don't know, Dave Binkley?
Never heard of the bum.
Never heard of the bum. Hoyted a bum. Oh, sure, he's a great guy. And he has Weirdness Really Bad Movie at 8:30 Eastern, basically a half an hour after the live show ends here, with The Fat Man. And that will be followed at 10 o'clock. No, excuse me, 10:30. It'll be Arachna of the Spider People. Beware Theater. So it's Arachna and Deadly hosting the movie The Head. And that's on Erie House TV tonight.
Yeah. Now, last Friday, if you didn't catch it, go into the archives, catch our Fat Friday. It was really a lot of fun with those detectives, Nero Wolf and the Fat Man. And this movie that is on at 8:30 on Erie House Television was also a star, J. Scott Smart, who starred in the radio series. And he starred in the movie. And, of course, you also had a very young Rock Hudson, Julie London, I think the first screen appearance of Jane Meadows, and one of only about six film appearances of the most famous clown in the world, Emmett Kelly. So,
wow.
It's worth showing up just for the cast, but the humor that J. Scott Smart brings to the as the detective, the Fat Man on the movie, it's hard to beat. It's fun. It's a murder mystery. Actually, several murders going on, and it's just a fun murder mystery to sit down and watch when you get a chance.
Well, unfortunately, no callers at this time. So, Dave, let's give this wheel a spin. Whose turn is it?
I think it's my turn this time, so I'm hoping for a really good spin. So let me reach up to I'm going to reach up to the top and give it a hard spin.
Around and around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
I know that voice. Oh, this ought to be interesting. I'm not even going to read the title. Let's just run right in.
Who is our first contestant this evening, Mr. Roberts?
Our first contestant tonight, Mr. Howard, is Corporal Joseph Rothenberger of the United States Army.
All right. Good evening, sir, and welcome to a Page Bigger. How do you feel this evening?
Oh, very fine, thank
you. That's just dandy. Where is your hometown? Would you care to tell us?
I live in New York City.
Oh, New York City you live. Well, that's swell.
New York City?
Yes.
Well, show me how to get on a train and call me Choo Choo Johnson.
I see.
I used to work in that town.
I thought so.
Yeah, I was a preacher. Preacher in a shoe store.
Yeah?
You were a preacher in a shoe store?
I used to save souls.
Very good. Pay no attention to him, Corporal. Never interrupt a bore. He'll think you're listening. How long have you been in the service, Corporal?
Almost 3 years.
Almost 3 years. Congratulations. How do you like it here at Camp Kilmer?
Oh, I like it.
Never mind. Don't mention that. Are you married, sir?
No, I'm not.
You're not married.
Hey, you know, Corporal, I was in the last war, yes. Well, I remember one day the sergeant said to me, McNaughton, what's the idea of complaining about Army food? Just because you found a little sand in your spinach. Don't you love your country?
What'd you say?
I said, sure, I love my country, but I don't want to eat it.
Then what did he say?
He said...
Never mind what he said. We're not interested. Look, we have a guest here. As I said before, pay no attention to them, Corporal. I might say we are certainly mighty, mighty... May I ask you what you did before you entered the service?
I was in the music business.
Oh, you were in the music business?
I must make note of that.
Yeah, make note of that, yes. You worked for a music publisher in New York?
No, I was a musician.
Oh, a musician. What instrument did you play?
Drums.
Drums. Oh, I see. You look a little disgusted. Would that be from listening to our orchestra? Would it please? Well, as I said before, it's a pleasure to have you here with us tonight, and I might say you certainly do make a fine-looking soldier.
Yeah, he sure does. Well, what's your first name, honey?
Joseph.
Joseph.
Is that a cute name,
yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
I just love... Isn't he a cute kid, too?
Yes, he is.
Never
mind.
You can just call me Baseball. I got lots of curves.
Yes. And you've been batted around a lot, too. us a favor, Joseph, and reach into the dunce cap that Johnny holds and pick out a question for us? And would you be kind enough to read the question, if you will, please?
How many days are there in a three-day pass?
Very good. You heard the question, gentlemen. See if you can answer it. How many days are there in a three-day pass?
You know, that question's going to be hard to get.
Yeah.
So is the pass.
Yeah.
There is a... Mr. Howard, I hate to ask you, but what was the question?
Mr. May, are you paying attention?
Oh, that's an easy question. The answer is no.
I thought so.
What was the question?
The question was, do you suffer from stupidity?
That is not the question. The question is, how many days are there in a three-day pass?
What 3 days did you have in mind, Mr. Howard?
No, you don't have to name the days. Just give me the answer, the number of the days in a three-day pass.
In the first place, where are you going to get a three-day pass?
I see.
Oh, Mr. McConnell, that's easy. All you do is go up to your commanding officer and say, pardon me, sir, but I'd like to have a three-day pass, you see? Mm. Then he says to you, are you sure 3 days will be enough? You see, and then you say, well, sir, better make it 10 days, you see? Then he says to you, come now. You can't go anywhere in 10 days. Why don't you take a 30-day pass?
Mr. McNaughton, you're just daffy.
Well, I can dream, can't I?
Yeah, I can dream.
But when you wake up, you're going to be awfully disappointed.
You can say that again.
Can I? Oh, thanks. When you wake up, you're going to be...
Oh, wait a minute. What are you
saying? She said I could say it.
Never mind, you third-rate morons. Will you shut your mouth? We have a question here. The pass will be up before we answer. How many days are there in a three-day pass?
Who do they give the passes to, Mr. Howard?
They give them to servicemen.
Servicemen?
Yes.
You like servicemen, Miss McConnell?
Yeah. What are they going to serve me a couple of?
I see. Miss McConnell, if you ever get a chance to lead your life over again, don't do it, please.
You know, I'm always thinking about soldiers and sailors, except when I'm asleep. I'll have to stop it.
Stop thinking?
No, stop sleeping.
I wish you'd stop breathing.
There's no future in that.
No.
You know, I held my breath for 3 minutes once.
Well, hold it for 30 days. If no one calls for it, it's yours.
Well, that was an interesting, fun little... That's got to be wartime, no, Dave?
Yeah, wartime from the... it pays to be ignorant, once again. It just... A fun little show, corny as all get out. The band was a corny little band as well called... they weren't the Hot Shots. Boy, now I can't think of who they are at the moment. But they purposely... They were like... we played a clip from them... Sweet Potato Polka, and basically they were kind of a poor man Spike Jones, is what they were.
Ah.
But it was fun to have that in there, because as much humor as you have, you got to have a little something to help break it up a little bit and have a little fun with that. So.
Okay. Well, with a little over a minute to go, besides tonight here on Erie House Television, is Weirdness Really Bad of available anywhere else for people?
Actually, we've got another Captain Zero Adventure tomorrow night, 10:30 on the Vortex, but we're not on this week on the Vortex. So it's Erie House or nowhere else this week.
I feel so exclusive. Well, thanks, everyone, for listening live here to Erie House Radio. We appreciate it. We'll be back next week with some more interesting radio shows. Maybe
trucking through the week.
Trucking.
Yep, trucking on through.
Yep, see you then.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And
when next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Ooh, that was like almost perfect.
There you go. You had it timed right. Had it timed right. Well, yeah, because you can't go by their clock. You just don't know.
It's almost It's almost like I knew what I was doing.
Oh, yeah? I thought the crowd doesn't seem to think so, but...
Nah, it was fun today. Yeah, creepy laughs, man. Gulardi had a distinctive laugh, of course, as we were listening to the Gulardi surf in the background.
Ah, yes. Yeah, you know, and
I think they all did. You know,
go ahead.
No, that's okay.
No, mine wasn't about laughing, but so go ahead.
Oh, I was just thinking how many different horror hosts had their own laugh, not just Ernie, but the ghoul, who, of course, was something of a pastiche of Gulardi. You had the recorded laugh. We played a bit of from Big Chuck's show, and earlier we heard Sammy Terry and Sir Graves Ghastly.
Hey, even Super Host, he had more of a snicker than a laugh.
Yes.
He
ain't talking candy bars.
You know, kind of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. He had his own distinctive laugh. I think that's a common trait among horror hosts. We'll have to make up our own laughs, Dave.
Yeah, well, I'll have to work on one, yes. Eerie house laughter that we can copyright or something, you know?
Yes. There's plenty of it to be had, too. We could probably just take something from an old show and tweak it a bit.
Could probably do that. The thing I was going to mention is I noticed in the Vorpal Bites comments, you talked about K-Tel Ronco and Ginsu. And it reminded me of a bit in 1980 that my brother wrote that we did about the original Japanese Ajipu knife. it was a little unpolitically correct, but at the time it wasn't something that really was that unpolitically correct. It just today you just can't you can't always do these things today, unfortunately.
You can't do anything anymore. You can't do anything anymore.
Yeah.
Especially if it has some kind of nationality connotation or something like that. Yeah. People lose their minds.
And it's kind of ridiculous because stereotypes are funny. As long as you're not doing it to purposely hurt and harm somebody in particular, you know, then I personally think it's okay to do it. And a lot of people don't. I know. December when we were doing our Christmas show. I was going to do a hashtag Me Too joke, and I had two of my cast members say, "You do that, and I can't be on the show." I said, "Really? All right."
Wow.
But it was funny.
There's a basis in truth. There's some basis in truth to stereotypes, you know. Little ironic in my own life, but having a Polish last name, even though I wasn't Polish, I got to hear every Polish joke in the world. And back in the Cleveland area, oh my gosh, during the 60s, that's all you heard. And in part because of Gulardi and Big Chuck.
Yes. Yes. And you know, there's so many ethnicities in Cleveland. You know, you got the Slovenians having a whole big community that was right downtown. You've got the Little Italy down there that was, you know, down there by University Circle and all. You know, there's so many ethnic groups and decent sizes of them. The only thing that Cleveland didn't have that I'm aware of would have been a Chinatown.
There are areas along State Road where there's a concentration of Chinese food stores. So my guess is when there are food stores of a certain ethnicity, you must have customers nearby. So I believe there's a small pocket. It's not a big neighborhood like Little Italy or some of the other ethnic areas.
Yeah, well, and I understand, because, you know, when you come to this country, you're going to settle around people, usually, that also speak, at least speak and understand what you do, you know, and you'd be out working in the other parts of the city and such, but there's a certain amount of comfort level coming from the neighborhood where you know there are people of your own descent.
Thus, your own descent, your own language, your own culture.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
And I think in the days of mass immigration, that, you know, before and during the World Wars, you know, a lot of people came over from Europe, and I think it became natural to settle with family and friends in certain neighborhoods.
Well, absolutely.
You
know,
in
Buffalo, you had the Schlichter Organ Company, which was of original German descent, and then we had a bunch of people that came. Like my neighbor, actually, he and his wife escaped East Germany to come here and work for the Schlichter Organ Company. And, you know, all the churches and so many other groups that were buying these big organs, he would be working on those. And interesting, learned to speak English by watching television and television commercials. So now whenever they tell you, if you're watching something, they say, that's not very educational, you say, depends on where you come from.
Well, and it depends what you get out of things, you know. People felt that comic books were making kids dumber, but... You know, we talked about that here.
Yes.
I remember running with a copy of the Fantastic Four to a dictionary to find out what was that insult Dr. Doom just gave. What was that scientific expression Reed Richards just made? And it expanded my vocabulary. It made me curious because I wanted the story to be cohesive and make sense and fully understand.
And look what Michael Jeske said. You know, He said that basically it was because of Superman. He didn't care to read. He didn't think it was necessary because they had television. And then he found comic books and the Superman comic books. And it gave him a reason to read. And by the end of the year, he was tutoring other kids how to read.
I forgot about that aspect of it. Just the enticement, the inducement to read from these exciting stories with the colorful characters and so forth. Absolutely. Another good, you know, much like a children's book will have something that would appeal to a younger eye or a younger mind. In the same way, your adolescents and preteens and teenagers and pre-adults really enjoyed the comic books.
Yes.
And
yes,
again, it gave you that passion to read rather than just have all your media come from other outlets like radio and television.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Reading is fun. It's so similar to radio because you use more of your mind, your own mind. With reading, you got to create the sounds in your head as well, you know, to picture the story you're absorbing.
Yeah, that's true.
But you do have to use more of your imagination. Which is why we're enjoying these radio shows, and we're just going to keep shoveling them at you.
Yep. Different kind of weekend this week.
Dave's working on this.
A weekend of mostly murder mysteries, but that's okay. And
what's a few murders between friends?
Yeah, I'm telling you. As long as we aren't murdering each other, it's okay by me, you know?
We'll be trucking next weekend. We got the Whisperer will be back. Yay!
We've never played a Whisperer. I'm looking forward to playing that for you. It's a cool thing. It's a guy that had lost his voice. He was a prosecuting attorney, I think, a district attorney. He'd lost his voice, and he could only talk in a whisper. Then he got his voice back, but he kept his Whisperer voice to give the underworld fear by hearing the Whisperer.
Hearing an episode. I thought it was here. My bad. It was on satellite radio. Now that you've described the premise of the story, or stories.
And they are crazy. They're fun. Again, they're fun stories. I too am looking forward to that. And the we always, Gar and I always talking about I Love a Mystery. Well, those were 15-minute segments, and they went on for anywhere between 12 and like 20-some parts. We can't do that. But he also did a program called I Love Adventure with some of the same characters, not necessarily the same actors, the same character names, and they were in half-hour episodes. So we'll be sharing one of those. So,
and an episode of Suspense on Saturday, and Behind the Mic. That's a cool show.
That is. And that was kind of an early look at, because it was what? Off the top of my head, I don't remember what year it was, but I thought it was more in the 1940s when radio was still, it was just really in its own at that point. But they were looking back at how radio did and how radio works and telling people and showing people on the radio about the sound effects and the stories and all kinds of names. It was really, I thought it was an interesting show.
Yeah. A little behind-the-scenes stuff for you from Behind the Mic, and that'll be Saturday after Suspense. So there's your weekend for next weekend. And we will probably rerun the TV schedule for next weekend.
Cool. I get to see the meteor of Captain Zero again next Saturday morning. Then. It's a cool episode.
Yeah, I just missed you at live stream this morning.
Yes.
Kind of running around doing all kinds of crazy stuff. You know what sort of ruckuses are going on in my household right now. But
there's that and the fact that outside of us working full-time and more than full-time jobs during the week, we also have families and yards to take care of on the weekend.
Yep.
So.
But there's always time for Erie House. We love bringing this stuff to you, and we'll keep bringing you more. So until then, we should probably see if Jimmy's hanging around here.
Somebody wake Jimmy up. I think he's sitting in a chair in the back corner.
Well, tell him good night.
Good night, Jimmy.
Good night, Jimmy.
Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. Good night. Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we say, and ink-a-tink-a-doo. Good night. Good night. Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.